Good afternoon. It is Thursday, the 24th of October. It is day four. I think it's day four now of the GAFCON conference here in Nairobi. This is David Old for Stand Firm, and I am with someone that a lot of our readers are big fans of. This is Bishop Jack Eicher of Fort Worth. Welcome, Bishop Jack. Thank you so much for agreeing to come and talk to us today. Bishop Jack, we are here at GAFCON. Tell me your impressions of the conference so far.
Well, it's been invigorating. I've especially enjoyed the opportunity to experience African spirituality and, and spiritual songs here. It's been good to be in a supportive community where we know we share the same faith and convictions. So all in all, very refreshing and encouraging.
What are some of the distinctives of African spirituality that you've particularly noticed?
I think a lot of it is that they're old revival hymns is what I would call them from my experience in the States. But they have a different flavor with, with the band and the clapping and the hand raising and the dancing. So I'd say African spirituality is very joyful. The body gets involved as well as the voice. And a great deal of enthusiasm.
Have you done much dancing?
I do not dance.
You do not dance. But in terms of the physicality, there's a common element there, isn't there, with Anglo-Catholicism and its understanding of the totality of being part of worship.
Sure. The true liturgical dance is what you see at a solemn high mass at the altar with three sacred ministers bowing and kneeling and moving about with incense and that's sacred dance too.
The true liturgical dance. Okay. Now, the province of the Diocese of Fort Worth has a very clear Anglo-Catholic flavor to it, and you're known particularly for that and respected for that. I wonder if you might talk to us for a while about the place of Anglo-Catholics within first the ACNA. How do you understand their place in the ACNA? Are you guys a central part or somewhat peripheral? How do you understand that?
I think there's a central part for Anglo-Catholics in ACNA. I think probably less so in GAFCON. Mm-hmm. I feel very much on the same page as the ACNA bishops. I don't feel marginalized in any way because of an Anglo-Catholic spirituality and theology. Mm-hmm. On the GAFCON level, which is international, it's clear that it's predominantly evangelical.
Yeah.
And I feel a little bit on the periphery,
okay.
Not because of any intentional slight or whatever. It's just that
it's where you find yourself.
My spirituality is not quite the same in many respects as a predominantly evangelical spirituality.
So I know we spoke about this a little bit yesterday when you and I chatted. In terms of the rhythm of the conference, in the wider sense, not just the African drum sense, in what ways have you felt that disjunction of being just slightly on the side rather than in the middle of it?
Yeah. Well, I think my expectation would be for a group that's claiming to be authentically Anglican, mm-hmm. that our prayer life would be set in the routine of prayer book worship, mm-hmm. which would ordinarily mean daily morning prayer, daily evening prayer, and daily communion, according to the Book of Common Prayer.
Yeah.
As I mentioned to you the other day, when even the House of Bishops of the Episcopal Church meets, they have daily morning, evening prayer, daily Eucharist. That was the pattern at General Convention. Yeah. That's the pattern at Lambeth. So when I came and found that we didn't have that prayer book routine, it seemed to me that that's something that should have been planned into the conference.
If I can just push you on that for a minute, because I know there'll be some of our readers who'll be in wholehearted agreement and some not quite so much. How would you respond to some of those who would say your assessment of authentic Anglicanism is actually just one particular strand, finds deep roots in the Tractarian movement and places like that, but actually what we're seeing here is another authentic strand of Anglicanism, particularly African one in its local context?
Yeah. I think that I'd say to begin with that it's my understanding that according to rubrics of the Book of Common Prayer, clergy especially have always been under the obligation to say daily morning prayer and evening prayer, and if possible, at the church. Daily communion, perhaps not for most Anglicans, but for Anglo-Catholics certainly. But I mean, yesterday, for instance, was a Purbeck Holy Day, Feast of St. James of Jerusalem, and he wasn't even mentioned. And as a Purbeck Holy Day with lessons for Holy Communion, I think the assumption is Holy Communion will be celebrated on the days when you have a collect, epistle, and gospel for that particular saint on that particular day. So it seems to me that it sidesteps the richness of the Anglican tradition.
Are you and your clergy doing anything, therefore, during the day to compensate, it's not quite the right word, but to at least for yourselves, amend that gap?
Not together. I mean, obviously, I'm saying morning prayer
daily
before
office,
I get
yeah.
on the bus when I come over, and I'm saying evening prayer when I get back in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
But we've not gathered together. There's two priests in the diocese
okay.
here. But we're in different places, and you know,
sure.
it's difficult to coordinate
yeah.
schedules.
Yeah.
But we have also wanted to participate fully in the worship
yeah.
schedule routine of GAFCON
yeah.
And not to skip things because
sure.
we say, well, that's not my style or that's not my preference.
Yes.
So we've been
yeah.
fully engaged in the worship.
Well, and you know what? I think you'll find that some of these manly men from Australia and New Zealand that I'm with who are finding it hard to engage with some of it as well.
Yeah.
We're sharing in different ways. Those things.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the ACNA. How do Anglo-Catholics like yourselves deal with realities like the ordination of women in the ACNA? Those would seem to be some pretty serious issues. How do you get to grips with those and still keep your place in the life of that province?
Yeah. Well, I think that it, for me, would go back to how the Episcopal Church initially approved canons for the ordination of women to the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was understood as permissive, not mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
The tragedy of the Episcopal Church is, of course, it did move into the direction of becoming mandatory. And in fact, objections to my being elected and protests at my consecration were revolving on the fact that I wouldn't ordain women to the priesthood. So in a sense, I think ACNA is at the place where TEC was back in 1976,
okay.
that to say some dioceses do and some dioceses don't. The other thing that's critical about the ACNA situation is that the Constitution restricts the episcopate to men, that there are no women bishops in ACNA and none anticipated. And then thirdly, I'd say that the ACNA has agreed by the appointment of a theological task force to do the necessary theological reflection and study and debate that TEC never did.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rights issue, an equality issue, not one of trying to discern God's will for the church and obedience to Holy Scripture.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm encouraged by the fact that though there are some dioceses that ordain women of the priesthood, most of the bishops in ACNA do not ordain women of the priesthood.
Another thing that's happened recently for ACNA is a new prayer book that's just come out. I think I saw just before we left for GAFCON that came out. Do you have any thoughts or assessments of that prayer book?
The only times I've used it is when we were at bishops' meetings or ACNA assemblies.
Mm.
So I have not used it personally. I've not used it at home.
Yeah.
I can see the need for it, but I'm not really enthusiastic about trying to go back to Fort Worth and encourage people to use it. I mean, we're pretty happy with what we're doing, whether it's right one or right two. The good thing, I guess, that's coming out of the liturgy is a return to an accurate translation of the Latin instead of "and also with you" to say "and with your spirit." And, of course, the ACNA liturgy gets rid of the distinction between a right one and a right two.
Right.
It's all in more or less modern language, but a translation of the prayer book into "you" and "your," or the "thee" and "thou," and so on. A moderate.
What in your sense is lost when you do that, though? Because for some of our listeners, they'll go, "So what?" But that's obviously there's a concern there of yours. What is that?
I'm happy with right one or right
two. Oh, okay.
I mean, I don't exclusively use right one. I'd say in Fort Worth, for the diocese is pretty much the same. Mm. So I can go from rite 1 to rite 2. Mm. I'm comfortable with the 1928 rite as far as that is. Mm-hmm. But at the diocesan offices, where we have daily morning prayer together as the staff, we rotate rite 1 and rite 2 based on seasonal use, so there's not a preference.
Now, just thinking more widely about ACNA, I think it's fair to say that the growth of ACNA and the bringing in of various smaller groupings into that wider umbrella has been at times at fits and starts in an ad hoc way. Yeah. Perhaps that was necessary for the initial growth of the movement, and certainly you've experienced a lot of that. But looking back now and learning from the way that has all operated, what advice would you have now to dioceses or churches that are now leaving the Episcopal Church and thinking about what to do? So just for example, but not specifically, what advice would you have for someone like Bishop Lawrence, whose diocese obviously left Tech recently? As you reflect upon the last 10 years and that sort of ad hoc snowballing, what advice would you have to him now about what he should take as he guides his diocese into the future?
I don't think I'd presume to offer any advice to Bishop Lawrence. I mean, he's doing fine, and I admire him and the direction he's leading the diocese. Mm. I think what's most important about having separated from the Episcopal Church is for the diocese to find itself in terms of mission and outreach and church growth, and not continue to speak of itself in terms of what we're against or why we left TEC.
Yeah.
But, you know, to shake the dust off and move on forward with a positive kingdom-building agenda. Mm-hmm. That's one of the good things about ACNA, is it's very concerned about the unchurched, the unbelievers, and about the necessity to plant new congregations. Now, in planting those new congregations, I think my concern would be, are they Anglican congregations, or are they just new Christian churches? And I think we would be more concerned about the churches that we plant, that they're planted in the prayer book Anglican tradition. Okay. And I think that's not always the case with some of the newer churches that have been planted by others in different parts of the country.
Mm. Now, when you say a prayer book tradition, do you mean actually use of the prayer book and nothing else? Or, for example, the way that they talk in Sydney, they say, in the spirit of the prayer book.
Yeah.
So I know, for example, as a clergyman in Sydney, I lead services that draw from the prayer book, but don't rigorously go through the prayer book at times, and yet we'd say it's in the spirit. How do you see that interplay? What for you would be the natural boundary of what you just called authentic Anglican?
Well, the only liturgies approved and authorized in the Diocese of Fort Worth are prayer book liturgies.
Yep.
So we have congregations that use 1928 prayer book. We have congregations that use 1979 prayer book.
Yep.
We have congregations that use what's called the Anglican Services Book, which is simply an expression of Rite 2 liturgies in Rite 1 language.
Yeah.
So I don't think which book you use is as important as that you worship in the Anglican tradition, and that is prayer book religion. I think it's important to observe the rubrics, not to ignore them. So I would not be comfortable probably in the spirit of the prayer book kind of a thing, because that sounds experimental to me, and that the clergy kind of are playing loose with the canons.
And so what's the danger there that you perceive in a situation like that?
I don't see it as a danger. I just think I'd go back to what I say is something that's authentically Anglican, and that's prayer book religion, and that means not just the doctrines of the prayer book, but the words of the prayer book. I prefer formal liturgical worship. I'm not as pleased with, loose liturgical arrangement without some formality and personal preference, I suppose.
Okay. Now let me ask you a tough one. Maybe, or maybe not. Do you think that ACNA bears all the hallmarks of a bona fide province, or is something more needed?
No, I can't see anything else that would be needed.
Then what do you think those hallmarks are that make ACNA bona fide?
Well, maybe you could tell me what you're talking about. I mean, a province is basically an affiliation of self-governing dioceses, so that the diocese is linked with the broader church, and then the province enters into communion with other provinces to be part of the worldwide church. And ACNA certainly does that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an international province in that it involves the United States and Canada. And it's international province in that we're a part of GAFCON. Part of what is affirming about GAFCON, I think, is that to the churches here, the authentic Anglican province in North America is ACNA, not the Episcopal Church of the United States.
Two final questions. One, what do you think, if you can guess, what do you think Justin Welby is going to end up doing in terms of his leadership of the communion?
I'm concerned about his comments relative to how the culture is against the church on the sexuality issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm fearful that he's going to be more encouraging of the church conforming to the culture rather than the church being counter-cultural.
Okay.
So I don't think the teachings of the church on matters of sexuality or theology are things that you put to a vote by doing a survey and say, well, how many people in the society favor this or that interpretation?
Sure.
I think you have to be faithful to the clear teachings of Scripture.
Yeah.
So my concern would be that he would be led to be more conforming to the culture. Mm.
Do you think there are internal pressures in the Church of England that are pushing him in that way, and particularly what they might be and how he ought to respond to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's being pressured because he is, first of all, the head of the College of Bishops in England. And I think he's being pressured a great deal along the sexuality issues. I've not heard what he's had to say about providing a place of respect and honor for those opposed to women bishops, mm-hmm. when that eventually comes about. But it's important that he take a leadership role in saying that that must be provided with whatever legislation is adopted about the ordination of women to the episcopate.
So supplementary, if I can, how do you think his leadership then compares to that of Rowan Williams?
I haven't had time to observe it. Okay. I mean, I just met him on the airplane coming here.
Okay.
He's a charming, engaging, likable person. It was a joy to chat with him. But in terms of leadership style, I don't know. Rowan's leadership style seemed to be to make no decisions and take no actions.
Mm.
What concerned me most is after the primates would make decisions, he, with the encouragement of other people at Lambeth or the Anglican Communion office or wherever, would simply find ways to undo and not enforce.
And we're talking particularly about the Dar es Salaam decision,
I mean, I think we'd be in a totally different place in the communion if the Dar es Salaam strategy had been vigorously promoted and led by the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Yeah.
Our initial reaction, as you know, to the election of Catherine Jefferts Shorey as presiding bishop was to appeal for alternative primatial oversight, and we made that appeal directly to the Archbishop of Canterbury. We'd be in a totally different place now if he'd accepted that appeal.
Mm.
So there's a number of things like that under Rowan Williams' leadership that you say, oh no, a lost opportunity, and the result has been brokenness and fragmentation in the communion.
Mm.
Unfortunately, the so-called instruments of unity or instruments of communion have been used by the liberals as instruments of control and power and to undo what the primates particularly were strategizing to hold the communion together.
Mm.
And that's a great tragedy for the whole church, I think.
It is. Okay, last question, Bishop Jack. Crystal ball time. Some of it you may know, some of it you may not. You're probably not the first one, but maybe not the last. What's the future for Bishop Jack Eicher, for the Diocese of Fort Worth, for ACNA, for GAFCON, and indeed for the Anglican Communion? What do you think? What do you know?
Well, that's asking a lot.
Yes, that's my job.
I mean, my own immediate priority is to continue to lead the diocese on to life beyond litigation. We've been living the last 5 years with the threat of perhaps losing all of our buildings and properties and assets, and we're just now seeing the hopeful conclusion of that with the recent decision of the Texas Supreme Court. So my first priority is to keep the diocese moving forward in mission, true to our Anglo-Catholic heritage and so on. Part of that means, however, we have to be in relationship with the broader church, which is why I've been more than happy to participate in ACNA gatherings and College of Bishops meeting and in GAFCON. So I think we'll continue basically in the trajectory we've had for the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm. What about ACNA more generally? What do you think the future for them is going to be?
I think it's a good future. I mean, we're needing to deal with, one, this issue of ordination of women to the priesthood, mm-hmm. And that's underway. But I think we also need to address more the overlapping dioceses thing. I mean, we have churches in Dallas, for instance, which are in 5 different dioceses with 5 different bishops.
Yeah.
And if we're all of one heart and mind and theology and so on, I think we need to begin to address that there's one bishop for one area. Less competition, less acronyms that identify different groups within the one church. So a focus on a deepening unity in faith and in structure.
Okay. Now what about GAFCON and the Anglican Communion? It's hard, isn't it, to put a finger in the air and try and work it out. But what's your gut? What's your sense of where this is going?
Well, I think it's going to increase as a worldwide movement, as it is. The liberals keep trying to undercut it by saying it's divisive. But, of course, it's uniting. And it's what's keeping traditional believers in the Anglican Church.
Yeah.
So I see it growing in strength and numbers. I don't know that I would call it an alternative to the Anglican Communion so much as an expression of the Anglican Communion for traditional Orthodox believers. Yeah. The division's been caused, of course, by the innovators and for those who introduce strange teachings and practices into the Christian church and in direct contradiction of teaching Scripture.
Yeah. We're almost done. Bishop Jack, any last words for readers and now listeners of Stand Firm, or even for the Stand Firm writers? We always love to hear from you.
I always appreciate reading Stand Firm. I thank you for your work, for the good coverage you're doing here at GAFCON.
Thank you. Well, Bishop Jack, on behalf of our readers and my fellow writers, thank you so much for making the time today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.